Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, Christmas Week Edition, Year in Review Edition, here with Andrew Marsh and John Oran, regulars throughout the year on the SI Media Podcast, and now co-hosts of their own pod. They join me to go through the 2021 year in sports media, a little review and recap of what's gone on here the past 300 and almost 65 days in sports media. Then we do our Train of Thought segment with Sal Licata, where we need everyone to listen to the Train of Thought segment this week. We get into a little thing. We want to know if there are any other Delilah fans out there, either you know or you don't know about Delilah. If you are a Delilah fan, listen to the Train of Thought segment. We want to hear from you. So that's a little setup for you. Before we get to Marshan and Oran and our year in review in sports media, just a reminder, if you missed last week's show, Troy Aikman was on the podcast. 2 weeks ago, Stanford Steve from ESPN. 3 weeks ago, Jim Miller on all things HBO and some sports media topics. So check those out in the archives. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast and rate and review on Apple. All right, here we go. Year in review, 2021 sports media with Andrew Marshan, John Oran, followed by Train of Thoughts right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, regulars on the SI Media Podcast and co-hosts of their own podcast. I mean, we're going to now sort of do a little review of 2021 in sports media. Obviously, the biggest sports media story in 2021 was the launch of the Marshan Oran podcast. And those hosts are here, Andrew Marshan and John Oran. I'm going to start with Oran. How did you let him get away with calling it Marshan and Oran instead of Oran and Marshan?
They told me it was alphabetical. Andrew's before John and Marshan's before Oran. And I just kind of went with that.
There's no way Marshan didn't put his foot down and say it has to be Marshan and Oran.
Well, I was trying to figure out how to go first, but there's no way to put my foot down and look cool while like arguing for that. So I just kind of let it play out.
Well, Jimmy, you'll like it. The best story of that of all time is when Mike and the Mad Dog first began and Mike was off. And then Chris didn't play the jingle. I may have to write a book about Mike.
No, he had the jingle. F-A-M. He had Mike's name removed from the jingle.
That's right.
He had it. That's removed. Even worse.
Oh, he had it removed. And that caused imagine? A whole fight.
That's actually Jimmy, for the Christmas time SI Media Podcast. We should have a drinking game. When Marshan brings up Francesa, we all have to drink.
Well, we're all having a little Mike withdrawal since he's been out of the picture for a while. So, but that they actually, I'll give ESPN a little plug here on the ESPN 30 for 30 on Mike and the Mad Dog. They cover that where Dog tells his producer to remove Mike's name from the jingle. One of the more egomaniacal moves in sports radio history for sure.
Well, if Oran takes a week off, it's going to be the Marshan Sports Media Podcast. It's going to be out of
there. His name out. So, like I said,
Andrew, you can argue with yourself, Andrew. That'll be great.
Like I said, Andrew from New York Post, John Oran, Sports Business Journal. They teamed up halfway through 2020, about there, to start a pod, which you can catch weekly. I think they're doing a year in review on their pod. We'll do it here. Let me start with this. I want to get into a bunch of specific stories, but I'm going to ask you each. We'll start here with Marshan. Give me the sports media figure you thought had the best year and give me a breakout sports media star for 2021.
Okay. Best year, I'll go Pat McAfee. And also I'll make him my breakout star. I'm going to go double there because I just think, look how quickly he has gone from the field to being the highest paid per year sports media personality that at least we know of in terms of salary at $30 million a year. Now, look, that deal is a little bit different than your media deal. That's not really from an ESPN. It's more of a sponsorship agreement. It's not like they're hosting the show FanDuel, but it's still $30 million. I think he just went to the next level by his contract and just his influence. The Aaron Rodgers every week, that was huge influence. And I think WWE, he does on Friday with Fox. I think he's only going to get bigger probably because it's just the start for him. And so he's a machine now.
You know, it's interesting because you guys, especially John, cover the business side of this way. You know, I don't really cover the business side of it. And his deal is fascinating from the standpoint of his show is available for free on YouTube, but it's also on SiriusXM, and he's getting all this money from FanDuel. There's a lot of layers there that if you dug into it from a business standpoint, I think would be really interesting. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I don't know, John, if you want to add anything about McAfee before you give us a couple of, you know, star of the year and breakout star of 2021.
No, I'm a big fan of McAfee's. I think that what he did is so untraditional. I mean, he quit Barstool. He decided not to go with Fox or ESPN. And he just kind of built his own media company. And like you said, with a SiriusXM and with YouTube, he has all these different revenue streams coming into him. And the FanDuel thing was just, you know, the icing on the cake, in my opinion. So I'm going to stick with the business. My breakout star, Jimmy, is going to be Michael Rubin of Fanatics. He hasn't done a ton yet in terms of sports media, but he's been kicking the tires. He's been meeting with every single league. And one of the main topics that we talk about on our pod just about every week is the problem with the regional sports networks and how they're going belly up. And he has a potential solution for this, and he's talking with the leagues. And if something happens, and if Sinclair gets out of the Bally Sports RSNs, Michael Rubin from Fanatics is poised to set up some sort of streaming service to help that out.
What's his solution? Do we know what it is?
His solution is he has very deep pockets. He has very deep relationships, and he's going to create some sort of streaming service with out of market rights to get. I mean, the problem with RSNs right now is cord cutters. Nobody subscribes to the cable bundle anymore.
I was going to just say, Andrew, because probably speaks this, because one, you know, this is my New York bias here, which is interesting. I always expected more teams to start their own networks like the Yankees and Mets have here in New York, because from what I know, even with low, regular season baseball ratings not being, you know, huge numbers, Yes and SNY here in New York, they both do well. Why haven't we seen more teams start their own regional networks?
Because all ratings points aren't the same. In New York, you have Yankee fans that are avid Yankee fans. Imagine dropping Nesson from a Boston area distributor. You would see riots. Right. Imagine dropping the Kansas City Royals from a Missouri distributor. You kind of get a shrug. Look at the problem that the Dodgers are having. They launched their own network. It took them forever to get some sort of distribution because the fans in Southern California, they aren't as avid as they are. So there's one thing that all the distributors take a look at is fan avidity. You know, like what are the fans that are going to be willing to blow up their cable in order to get the channel? I mean, for me in DC, it's the Terps. If Xfinity ever drops Big Ten Network, I'm gone. You know, right. as long as they have that, I'm good.
Yeah, John, Andrew, I don't know with Michael Rubin and Fanatics, why wouldn't Major League Baseball just go to ESPN Plus or Amazon, who already have this, and do the local rights that way? Why do they need? I'm not saying he couldn't do it, but I don't understand. And I understand he has a lot of information about sports fans throughout his businesses, but so do ESPN and Amazon. I feel like they could also do that direct-to-consumer thing with local rights.
Oh, and I think ESPN is also talking, and Amazon, they have a stake in Yes Network. They have a stake in the Cubs. They're also talking in terms of a breakout star, though. I just want to hear the new entrant into it that has a potential solution. I'm not saying 100% that it's going to go to Fanatics. I think that there's a lot of question marks about whether or not the leagues want Fanatics to control, you know, the merchandise and ticket sales and betting and the media rights on top of it. So they might, there's a lot of hoops to jump through. I just think that they have somebody that haven't been on my radar before that are now.
So I asked you, give me a sports media person who had the best year and then a breakout. You said Michael Rubin. Is there someone you want to add as who had the best year there in sports media in 2020?
Oh, I'll repeat what I think what ESPN has done this year. I'll give it to Jimmy Pitaro. Again, just sticking with the business, the rights deals that they signed with the NFL, with Major League Baseball, with the NHL, with Wimbledon, the PGA Tour, they really have gotten out there and have been a part of every conversation and have closed an incredible amount of deals.
All right, let's talk about some of the biggest stories of the year. When I was trying to think about it myself, and I thought biggest sports media stories of 21, three immediately came to my head. I think Amazon getting the exclusive rights to Thursday Night Football. I thought the Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor controversy, and the Manning cast. Those for me were the three that came to my head immediately. Am I missing anything that should be in that top three? We'll start with you, John.
I think the NFL deals that were signed early on, and just in the era of cord cutting, the NFL getting $110 billion worth of deals is phenomenal. It's one of the best stories that I've covered. That's one that I would put in there.
Andrew, anything missing from that top three?
Yeah, I would have said the NFL TV deals, but I think you nailed it. I think if I were to add one more, just the big money with the McAfee $30 million deal, yep. Stephen A., $12 million. I think the gambling influx of money into the sports media is a huge story that's just going to gain even more momentum in 2022. But I think those three are the ones that probably stick out the most.
All right, so let's dip into those three for a second. The first one is the NFL gives exclusive rights to Thursday Night Football to Amazon starting next year. Andrew's been all over the broadcasters for it. Amazon wants Al Michaels, and it definitely sounds like Al is going there. And then I guess they said Troy Aikman, who talked about it last week on the pod, if you missed it, a couple of others. Let me ask you this, Andrew. What are the expectations from the NFL and from Amazon for this? Thursday nights for Fox, I guess, are pulling in, 14, 15 million a week? What is Amazon expecting here from this and the NFL? Is there any chance it's a disappointment?
Well, I think the expectations will be much lower because whenever you go to a new medium, it just takes time to discover and to figure it out and what type of games they have. Fox has been moving some of their top Sunday games to Thursday. They have that advantage. What type of schedule will Amazon receive? So I think they know that this is a process that they're going to emphasize. It's a 12-year deal. If you look at the overall TV deals, it's all traditional TV. You'll be able to watch the NFL basically as you do now, well into the 2030s early 2030s, I should say. And so this is the only thing that they're going to be growing. But I think initially what will be a big story next September is this is what Amazon and the streams will be public is receiving in terms of their streams on Thursday. And this is what Fox was doing a year ago with the 15 million people watching on some weeks. And so that is going to be a big story this year in the fall. And then in terms of the crew, I reported about Al Michaels back in September, also Troy Aikman as the leading candidate. I reported that a long time ago. I shouldn't say the leading candidate because that's actually wrong. I should say a top candidate with along with Chris Collinsworth and Drew Brees. And then there could be some mystery candidates, maybe a coach. But, Al Michaels doesn't necessarily want to break somebody in. Maybe a coach he'd break in because those guys are a little bit different if it was a top coach. But I think they're broadcasting. They're going to have alternative feeds as well, just like the megacast that ESPN's done and Turner's done with their multicast. And then, of course, the success of the Manning cast this year. So I think Amazon is going to be a humongous story. John, if you listen to the podcast, is completely mistaken on this. He keeps downplaying Amazon as if it's nothing. He keeps saying, Jimmy, settle this for me. He acts like Thursday Night Football with the NFL is like a nothing. He's like, it's the worst package. It's the NFL.
That's not true. Monday night is way worse than Thursday night.
Monday night, as it currently exists, is way worse than Thursday night. Thursday night with Amazon, they're not going to have those Fox games to mix and match. Those Thursday night games you're going to see on Amazon, you may as well call it like the Jacksonville Jaguars channel.
I think the NFL will still take care of Amazon a little bit because they want it to succeed. And at this point, listen, the other thing too is, whatever the schedule comes out, by the time November and December roll around, you don't know what's good or bad. It all changes.
That's true, too.
But people are going to watch the NFL no matter what. Just to piggyback on what Andrew said, Al Michaels is definitely 100% going to Amazon. Like, to me, all you had to do is listen to Al on my podcast a few weeks ago. He's going. And Troy, I think it sounds like Troy will just go to whoever gives him more money, if I was reading between the tea leaves last week. But I will say this.
I wanted some follow-ups, Jimmy. I wanted some follow-ups. Drill that down.
He's not going to tell me anything. But I do. Well, here's the follow-up I asked. This is what I was going to say. I think I did a good job with this follow-up. The one thing I was surprised, Troy made it pretty clear he's not going to do both. He's doing one or the other, which I thought was
interesting. Well, he did say, and I kind of reported this before, is that he could do like the schedule he has now, where he only does the late big window Sunday doubleheader games on Fox, and then does the playoff Super Bowl, and then does Thursday night football, which would be both, and it's probably his best way to get the most money. But yeah, you're right. It does seem like, look, the Romo money hangs over all this. That contract was crazy. $180 million for 10 years. The length, the money is so humongous for 20 games. Troy Aikman sees that. You know, he might not say this. I don't know exactly if he definitely thinks this, but he was the better. Again, this doesn't have anything to do with it. He was the better quarterback. He has three Super Bowl rings. Romo doesn't. And he's been doing it longer, two decades. Romo's been doing it for 3 years. Romo had great success and great timing, but that hangs over everything.
I don't want to push come to shove. I can't see Troy Aikman saying, I don't want to do another Super Bowl, or I just want to be stuck with no matter what a Thursday night football schedule on Amazon that's now going to be seen by, it's going to be the least viewed of all the packages. Is that a place where Troy Aikman wants to go?
Well, listen, I agree with you there. And that's always been my contention about Al. Like, Al Michaels should not be ending his career on Amazon, but Amazon will probably pay these people a crazy, crazy amount of money because they have it, so they can throw it at them. I agree. Listen, Thursday night football, people want to watch Thursday night football because they want to watch any kind of football because of fantasy and gambling and all that. But yeah, it's not Fox or CBS or NBC. That's my take on it. And I'll say one other thing. You know, the other night, for the first time this season, there was a New York Rangers hockey game that was on ESPN Plus and not shown locally. And I saw, like, I never seen anything about hockey. And they were like, I saw a bunch of tweets from people all pissed off that they needed ESPN. So imagine if there's like a Thursday night football game where they put the Cowboys on there or something.
Hey, Jimmy, John, my favorite part of your pod is when you talk about your dad. Has your dad ever like watched anything on Amazon Prime?
Netflix, but not Prime. We can do Netflix.
That's Are you going to go over to his house to teach him how to log into to Thursday Night Football?
No, definitely not.
Does he care enough to watch Thursday Night Football?
No, definitely not.
Well, that's the thing.
Right. He's not playing fantasy football and wagering. I will say I'm looking forward to that first week or two when people realize the only way to get it is on Prime on Thursday night and seeing what the backlash is. The other story I mentioned was Maria Taylor, Rachel Nichols. I think I had Andrew on. We've discussed it when it happened. You know, looking back at it now, the thing that just stuns me more than anything when I look back on it now is that they're both not at ESPN. Obviously, it wasn't handled well, I think, from all parties, basically. Maria Taylor was with NBC. Rachel Nichols, unfortunately, it seems like has been put in witness protection. I mean, this is one for you, Andrew. Why hasn't ESPN just let her get out of her contract and let her get another job? What's the point of just putting her away for a year?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could let her go. I don't know if at the moment, if she has 8 million offers, right? They are paying her the final year. I don't know her exact salary, but I would say it's around the $2 million range is what she was making. So she's getting her $2 million. I guess they could do that. I don't know if people are necessarily jumping at Rachel Nichols at this moment to hire her. I do think she'll have a comeback in 2022. What that will be, I don't know. She does have Adam Silver in her corner. He said publicly that you shouldn't be let go for one poor comment. And I do think the factor that she was talking in private, when you look at the comments, they were mostly directed at ESPN executives and her allegation that they weren't, they had a bad record on diversity. I think they're also mad at Rachel Nichols that they were in that situation, even though, I think a lot of it wasn't her fault. Some of it was her fault. I think the real big problem that she had was she didn't create enough friends over the years internally. So not many people stuck up for her. And so it was easier for them to justify just letting her go. But of course, they waited a year before they really did anything, which wasn't good. But Yeah, I guess they could. I don't know if that's been broached or not. So I really can't speak to that if that's been broached or if that's a possibility. But I'm not sure people are want, you know, she's in hot demand right now.
Right.
Yeah, this to me, Jimmy, place, like, management let that fester for a full year, which is really just unconscionable. I mean, every time I talk about this, I hear from ESPN and they're, what would you do? It's like, you're a manager. You figure out how to get these two people.
Not that. I always say I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to be able to play in the same sandbox together. I mean, the two prime people. But the other thing is, ultimately, I think this worked out well for ESPN. They were able to blow up a pregame show that hasn't worked for a decade, or for as long as they've had the NBA rights, pretty much. And it's still too early to make any kind of definitive judgment on the current pregame show. But the little that I've seen so far, it works for me. I think.
Wait, why is it too early to make a judgment? I mean, that pregame show has gotten as much buzz as it's always gotten, which is zero.
All right.
Am I wrong? I mean,
you're right. I think you're right.
I can't remember if I asked you guys, give me one moment, one clip, one anything from that pregame.
Well, the first show they were at.
They had audio problems or something, right?
No, Greeny didn't know they were on, so they didn't get some buzz there.
Right. So outside of that, give me one thing from that pregame show. I mean,
I disagree with John.
You can, but I just want to say one thing. I'll let you go in one sec. I think ESPN wants it that way. That's why you put Mike Greenberg there. You put Mike Greenberg there and you get nothing, and that's the way they want it.
It's a pleasant intro into the game. Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, you get Stephen A. there. So he does make some noise. I just think, I think the show is a very solid ESPN show, because basically that's what it is. It's Get Up with Greeny. It's First Take with Stephen A. It's PTI with Wilbon, and then they'll have Jalen Rose, who has Jalen Jacoby. He's on there. And then when the big shows, they'll bring in Magic. And those are the people Stephen A wanted. So he's got a lot of power there. But I don't think it's creating much buzz. And I think the funny thing was, after the whole Maria Rachel, we all watched the NBA Finals, and it was so stark at halftime when the halftime show was on for 3 minutes. And part of it was Jalen Rose saying, pay Maria Taylor. That might have been in the pregame, but right. It was just kind of a circus. But the point is, it wasn't even on, and it was more of what happened, because the New York Times story with the private comments and then the race element of it became a big thing that kind of jumped off of the sports pages into the news pages, and that's why. But I don't know if the show is really that important, quite honestly.
Yeah, I think it's proven that it's not. I mean, nobody cares about that pregame show.
But it is important, because the thing is, the backstory, again, with Maria and Rachel, is that they're fighting for that NBA countdown job and forever, and ESPN management. Back, you know, Connor Schell was really the one in charge of that at that point, never really made he was an ESPN executive who's now left, but he was the one who never really chose between the two. And so there was that ambiguity, and they were fighting for that forever. And this was just the Game of Thrones coming to the, ebb and flow of the public. And here we are, Rachel's on the sideline. Maria Taylor is at, at NBC. And the funny thing is, and I think this is a very good, I know ESPN now acts as if like, oh, it's good we have Rachel. They were crowing about the Jump forever, how the Jump is important, it's in the conversation, it's a great show, and then all of a sudden they just wipe their hands. Maria Taylor, up and coming star, she leaves, now they're happy again. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with this stuff on and off the air, a lot of it, some of it we know, some of it we don't know. But I do think what you just said at the beginning is a great point, though. Somehow they went 0-for-2 in terms of keeping these two women who they had as important.
We're both talented, people. Both talented and good at what they do. Yeah. And I will say,
by the way,
that pregame show will become important in the conference finals and the NBA finals. That's when people start paying attention. And that's when I think you'll get some judgment on it. Right now, no one cares, and TNT is always going to dominate it. John, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think all of us are in general agreement on that. I think what's obvious to me here is that my bar for an ESPN NBA pregame show is a lot lower than yours, and they're jumping over my very low bar. And it's
not even my bar. I'm just looking for a moment that stood out. No, you guys can't even give me one. So it's not even about my bar. Give me one thing that's happened this year on that pregame show.
These shows
Andrew gives me Greenberg not knowing he's on the air. Nothing else needs
shows,
to be
though,
said.
But the thing is, when you break down these shows from First Take to Undisputed, they are only make real noise when someone says something stupid or something like that. It's not like, well, that's a tremendous point. Now, Barkley stands out because he's Barkley. He's the best ever. He's different. But and that's why, again, all due respect to everybody, Ernie's a tremendous host. Shaq's excellent. Kenny Smith fits his role very well. But Barkley's the one that makes that happen.
Right. But like ESPN can't even give me something like when Kenny and Shaq run to the big board. I mean, they can't.
Yeah, they're not fun. They don't have enough. Like, I do think like the NFL live show with Rutledge, Mina, Spears, and Olofsky, Keyshawn, and Ryan Clark, I think they're getting there. They don't have enough fun, ESPN show. There's not like Good Morning Football.
But that's every ESPN show. That's not how they do
exactly. Things. Too serious.
Inside the NBA would never exist on an ESPN dial.
This is the perfect transition into what I said was the third biggest story of the year, because it is all about fun, which is the Manning cast. Now, it's funny, the Manning cast, I said top three. You guys would probably maybe say top five biggest sports media stories of the year. Overwhelming success. Draws less than 2 million viewers a week, but we still say overwhelming success, which is funny. John, ESPN has to be ecstatic with the feedback and the way the Manning cast has come out, correct?
Well, so just given what we were just talking about, Jimmy, who produces the Manning cast? It's not ESPN. It's Omaha Productions. And so it's a very sort of un-ESPN thing. They're willing to have technical glitches. They're willing to bring in, you know, talking to the commercial. I mean, you don't see that on general ESPN studio shows. As far as ESPN, they're thrilled with it. It's taking a lot of attention off of a three-man booth that when all the attention is on that three-man booth, you see a lot of social comments that aren't too favorable with that. It adds an audience. So it's under 2 million, but it's about 2 million people that are sticking around and watching the game a lot longer. And that's adding into the overall Monday Night Football pie that they sell for advertisers. They like everything about it. I don't think that they want it to get too much bigger than like a 2-3 million audience, 2 or 3 million viewer audience number.
Why would that be?
Just because they have a main feed, you know, and so at some point it's just going to be taking away from that.
Andrew, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, number one, I would say ESPN. I'm going to save you a phone call or an email. They'll tell you that they co-produce it with Omaha
Productions. Of course, they co-produce.
We had a big.
So we've all gotten that email.
Yeah, exactly. We had a big fight about when I said the host. I said Peyton decided. There's a big thing. Peyton didn't decide who the host is. Oh, really? If Peyton had said I want a host, would there have been a host? Yes. So,
yes.
The whole thing is whatever Peyton wants. ESPN could send us any emails they want. Whatever Peyton wants is what's going to happen on that show.
Look at the deal he got. He does 10 out of 18 or so games. So first off, he's not even doing a whole schedule. Secondly, it's work from home. He doesn't have to go anywhere. Thirdly, he gets to work with his brother. All right. Fourthly, he's getting paid eight figures. It's, you know, I think it's probably closer to 20 than 10 million a year when you look at the overall. I don't know the exact number, but it's eight figures. We know 10 million plus. So you look at the deal. It's payment. But here's the thing for ESPN. It's worked out tremendously. So, and I actually think less is more. I don't think if they do it every week, I think it will get tiresome and wouldn't be as good. Now it makes it special. And in this world, I think you're either all in 24/7 or you kind of want to be every once in a while. That's kind of one of Al Michaels is kind of the keys to his success. He's been a less is more guy. I do think part of it is to try to make the most money to do the least amount, which is kind of everyone's goal. And some of these sportscasters have perfected that. But I also think it works for him because you only associate Al Michaels with big games, which was what makes him valuable to Amazon, you know, getting back to that conversation. But I think that, so I think that less is more approach works with the Mannings.
I agree with you there 100%. You know, it's interesting because as a viewer on a Monday night, you put it on and you want to see them and they're not there, you know, 7 out of the 10 weeks, but it does add something special when they come back. So I think you hit the nail on the head there. John, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it just proves why everybody wanted to hire Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning is just an absolute star. I go back to when was Ray Lewis on it? I think that was maybe the first or second episode that they had. Ray Lewis on ESPN was an awful analyst. He just really, he wasn't able to get his ideas out in a way that was entertaining. With Peyton Manning and with Eli Manning, he had me belly laughing. It was like they were able to draw out another side of these people that I just think is really unique.
The question there, though, I don't know if either of you want to get into this because it's a total hypothetical, though. But the question there then becomes, let's say Peyton was your quote unquote traditional analyst in the booth doing 17 games with Al Michaels. Is he as entertaining as he is doing the Manning cast with Eli Manning 10 weeks out of the year? I don't know if it's a slam dunk. Yes.
I mean, I think he'd be excellent. Like, I think the thing that
he would be excellent, but this seems like the perfect format.
Well, the thing is about the quarterbacks. Like, I don't like, I hate, like, I think part of the reason ESPN didn't go for Greg Olsen is because they had Jason Witten and he's tight end. And I think that's like such idiotic thinking. Who cares what they play? And they just maybe didn't recognize. And I don't know if Olsen, I mean, I think Olsen's excellent. I've been high on him. I'm not going to put him in. Kevin Burkhardt told me he could be the best ever. I'm not sure if I'd go there. He's good and has a lot of potential. So we'll wait and see on that. But I do think the quarterback, when they're focused on the game, sees the game is so about the quarterback that they see things in the game that they can explain very well and very quickly. And especially a guy like Peyton, who just it's so entertaining that he's annoyed when there's like a bad play, when there's not good football. It like right. literally annoys him. Like he's a fan of the team and right. he's just really a fan of the sport and the purity of it. And yes, would it be different if he was an analyst? Yes, but I think he'd be excellent. I think he'd be very well prepared. And I think, and so to answer your question though, I think, I don't know if he'd be as entertaining, it'd be different. So I don't know if you can really compare the two, but I think he'd be really good.
Yeah, because to fit into that analyst role, you have to sort of fit into a box. And I think so that I couldn't agree with you more, Jimmy, because like the Manning cast, it allows him to pull out its personality, and his personality is fun. And when he sees a bad quarterback throw and his reactions to it.
And he would be my counter to what you said, Andrew. You're 100% right. He would be excellent. But and you make the point about his reactions to the quarterbacks when they make a bad play or throw a pick. We're seeing his face. If sure. he's doing a regular game, we're not getting that visual. So that's why I think he's in the perfect format. I wouldn't want to see him do the traditional type of thing.
That's a good point, Mikey.
I appreciate that. couple of other stories from the year. We gave it, those were like sort of my top three, but there are obviously other important sports media stories. I want to start with this. The ratings across the board for every sport bounced back after the 2020 pandemic. Now, listen, it's a little ironic. I don't know if ironic is the right word because people get all pissed off when you use it poorly. But we're in the middle of now like the worst COVID thing going on ever right now with this Omicron. But in 2020, we were dealing with COVID. It was the first year of it. Every sport took a massive dip. You had empty stadiums. Every sport bounced back. Do we use that as sort of a sports is untouchable and sports is always going to be a moneymaker for whoever has rights and we're just, there's nothing that can hurt sports, John?
No way. I mean, sports right now is a total moneymaker and sports right now, all the big media networks, like if you don't like sports, you've cut the cord and you're now subscribing to Netflix. So the people that are now subscribing to cable and watching broadcast television, they're more predisposed to being sports fans. That's why you're seeing the networks fall over themselves to get the NFL deal, $110 billion worth. That's why you saw every single network involved pretty heavily in the Premier League rights that came out. That's why, you know, I think you're going to see even a smaller league like the Major League Soccer is going to see an increase over what it currently gets because these media companies want to have these live sports because that's the only thing that lasts. So they're no more, nobody's buying sitcoms anymore and throwing them on regular terrestrial television.
But in terms of the rate, I think this sort of proved that sports will always bounce back, right? In terms of ratings and
I don't know, Jimmy, I find it hard. Like it's so hard to compare anything to 2020. I mean, ultimately it's a TV show. And if you have a TV show without a rabid crowd cheering and the roar of the stadium, casual viewers aren't going to watch it. Like the three of us are big sports fans. So we're watching no matter what, but we have to think about what's bringing in the other people. I want to see what happens over the next couple of years.
Andrew.
Yeah, like I try to appreciate things before the pandemic, but I will say that the idea and the importance of fans to your enjoyment of watching these things was just magnified and so obvious that it's just not the same. You can be a huge fan of a sport, you can be a huge fan of a team, and just not seeing the crowd, it was depressing too, because sports is supposed to be an escape, and it really just felt like, gosh, this is really sad and depressing, and just reminding everybody where we are with the pandemic and all the horrors with it, and you can't even go to a football game. So I think that made people just turn it off a little bit. But I do think, your question is more like, is it never going to end? And I think we're both hesitant to say that, but I do believe it does show the strength of sports and, going forward, how important it is to media and especially television and these direct-to-consumer platforms where probably good news for us. These jobs are going to continue to be important.
I will say this, all of the networks and all the leagues are worried silly about younger kids that aren't watching sports in the same way that we're watching sports. So will it ever end? Like they're going to have to make sort of changes in order to get people like my son to sit down for a 3-hour game. Cause that's pretty unlikely.
And the change is going to be, they're all going to be gambling. So they're going to get money that way. And there's going to influx of the money is going to be the same. And I think they're going to get people to bet on games, and then the viewership will likely could go even higher because of that aspect. Not that everyone, let me make this clear. I'm not saying everyone's going to be a gambler. In fact, it'll be a smaller community. I did a story the other day with DraftKings, and they think the market in the US is 20 to 50 million people who will be, sports bettors. But there's, you'll still have your regular sports fan, but that will increase the pie and get these young people used to and wanting to watch games because they have money on it.
Well, that was another story I wanted to address, which I thought was a huge story in 2021, was not the gambling explosion, but the ease with which leagues got in bed with gambling companies and became partners with gambling companies. I mean, from the ads you see during games to every pregame show is filled with sign up for this crap and that crap. And you've got teams putting, betting kiosks in their arenas. I knew there'd be a gambling explosion. I was not expecting the leagues and to embrace it the way they have. And of course, it comes down to what everything comes down to, which is money. Are either of you surprised though that it got that the leagues embraced it so readily this year, John?
I'm not. I think that as gambling it became legalized. And how many markets is it legal in now? How many
states? Only like 18.
Yeah, you're coming 15. Up to like sort of half the U.S. And as that started to happen, I think you certainly could see this happening. I mean, to go see a Wizards game here in D.C., you can go and have a dinner at a sports book that's connected to the arena, but before going in. There's been a whole explosion. They see this as a huge revenue stream going from zero to whatever. You talk about the leagues. I'm looking at Disney, ESPN. Just wait in 2022. You talk about an explosion. They're going to be licensing their name and making like a boatload off of that as well.
Yeah. Andrew?
Yeah, I don't think I'm really surprised because you hit it on the head, the money aspect of it. It's flowing so much. It's very hypocritical. And I do think we might look back at some point and say, what were we doing? We have now gambling issues all over the place where people are addicted to betting. And, there are more safeguards perhaps because it's legal. So the books can close people off. That said, more people will be gambling. And so
Andrew, the NFL put out a PSA saying gamble responsibly. So that's got to help too.
Exactly. Right? It's like, where did I see that the other day?
Oh, well, every gambling ad ends with gambling problem. Call 1-800-GAMBLE.
Yeah. No, South Park had an old episode we were watching the other day. And it's like they had about the alcohol ads about, guy, you get these girls, yada, yada. And then it's like, at the end, drink responsibly. It's the same type of thing. A little CYA action there for the Five years ago, Roger Goodell would not even say you can't even mention gambling. Now they're just in bed with it. And I mean, it's money at the end of the day. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Another theme I wanted to people love when we get into talking about ESPN personality. So I thought, you know, it was interesting. When I was looking back, some of these maybe tie into like very late 2020, but it was another year where ESPN lost a lot of people. Kenny Mayne, they parted ways with, Katie Nolan, Trey Wingo, Mike Golic, Dan Lebatard, all out of the picture. Is that all just cutting costs? Is there something with the direction they wanted to go in with personalities? You know, I feel like ESPN had a great year from a business standpoint in terms of money and ratings and Monday Night Football bounce back. But in terms of their personalities, we already went through Maria Taylor, Rachel Nichols. I mean, Jay Williams was involved in some ridiculous controversies where he's tweeted about the Celtics having the first black coach. And then, you know, they had the whole Sage Steele mess. And then I mentioned all these people leaving. If you had to sum up the 2021 of ESPN, Andrew, what would be your takeaways from all that?
Yeah, I think they did a good job in terms of their rights deals, especially shoring up that NFL relationship and getting Super Bowls. I mean, those are huge. The NFL is the biggest thing. So that's number one. If you put everything on the table, I would say that's the biggest win that they had. In terms of, look, I think there have the – this happened in newspapers years ago. Like the there used to be – back when I started in the late and mid to late 90s, there was a third columnist at most newspapers, third and fourth columnist who never really made any impact and had the job for 20 to 30 years and didn't move the needle, made good money. That job does not exist basically anywhere. You know, it's either, I'm talking about general columnists, it's either you cover a certain sport and there's a few unicorns, like we have Mike Vaccaro at the Post and Ian O'Connor as well at the Post. So we have two, but those are number one guys. So that job doesn't exist. So now at the places like ESPN, you're seeing this because videos, especially like TV in a place like ESPN, kind of trails what happens at places like newspapers and magazines, things you've seen at SI. And so to me, those third columnist types are not going to, they're making a lot of money and maybe really, could you put somebody else in there and, you know, who could make half or even less than half of what those people were making and still have the same impact? I think that's what you're seeing with some of those moves. And some of them also just had better, you know, wanted to leave. But I could see why, you know, some of these moves, like Kenny Mayne, for example. Again, it's all personal taste. He never was my favorite, but like when I look at like ESPN and he was making around, you know, $1.5, $1.7 million working half the year. Again, they made a deal. Like I don't blame him because they made a deal for him to say no. And then they didn't really want him. That's obvious. So I could see him wanting to leave. Right. But I also think like, how long are they supposed to keep him on if he's really not making an impact? Or a huge impact. Nothing against Kenny Mayne. Great guy. Seems like whatever. I don't know Kenny well at all. I'm just saying I can understand the idea behind that. That maybe that money could go to other people too. Like that's how I would look at it.
John, you have anything on that?
One quick thing is I already went through like who my person of the year was Jimmy Pitaro based on all the rights deals. So if you take a look at where their focus is, it's all on live sports. What makes an impact? It's live sports. That brings the most eyeballs, the most viewers. And you know, this all started back in like 2013 when Fox Sports 1 launched. And you had Fox Sports 1 and NBC Sports Network and ESPN. And you had these bidding wars for this talent that doesn't exist anymore. So the salaries went up and now they're coming back. But I want to ask you a quick question, Jimmy.
Yep.
Top five, in your opinion, top five ESPN on-air talent. Rank them.
Now, current? Yeah,
currently, right now.
Van Pelt. Can I still say Chris Berman? Because he still works for them.
Yeah, ESPN Plus, yeah.
Stephen A.
Wilbon Kornheiser.
Greenberg.
I think that's not my cup of tea. I'll just say that. I'm sure he's the nicest man in the world. I just... To me,
that you cannot like somebody. Yeah. It's fine.
But I said Van Pelt, Berman, Stephen A. I'll give you Kornheiser and Wilbon is sort of one entry. And let me think.
Herbstreit?
Herb Street would be up there for sure. Oh, Van Gundy. Can I go Van Gundy?
Yeah, excellent.
And Breen is great too, but I love Van Gundy. Yeah. I'll tell you one guy though from ESPN who had, I think, a truly bizarre year, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future, which is Schefter. You know, he had the, you know, I wasn't at the time, but when I was looking back at the year sort of in review, a lot of people were pissed off that he came on draft day at 3 o'clock to say Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay. Then he had a couple of questions.
What was wrong with that? I mean, why were they mad about that? Because of timing?
Well, because he didn't really, he just said it on an accumulation of debt. Like it wasn't the way he presented it. If you go back in time, there were people who thought it wasn't a real report. This was not me. This is what some of the feedback.
Yeah, I guess I would say that. Look, I've hit Schefter more than probably anybody in terms of who writes about this stuff. And I've said nice things as well, I get it. The timing was really good for ESPN. I get that. But like, was it wrong? It was correct.
Well, the point is this, he had like three or four controversies this year.
Yes, Schefter. That's true. That is true.
And I know, I think from your reporting, Andrew, that Jeff Passan and Schefter, their contracts were coming up. I think Woj too.
Yeah, Woj.
Passan re-signed.
Yes.
Where do we stand with Schefter? Do you have any info on that?
Well, the gambling companies are going to be most likely interested. That's part of the, like, I didn't really write about it, but I did do some due diligence.
I think you can upgrade most likely to they are interested. Yeah.
It depends. Here's the thing. But I think it could be like a side gig for people to get there. So ESPN doesn't necessarily have to pay them all the money. And then you do like another deal with a DraftKings or FanDuel. I think that's possible. But yes, I think the gambling, those guys are going to be doing very well financially. They're going to have either ESPN's going to pay them even more money. I think they make, around, $3-4 million a year. They're doing very well now. They will have opportunities with those other entities. Now, will they want to go? Do they want the power of ESPN? I think ultimately, I'd probably say they'll stay at ESPN. But yeah, you're right. Schefter did have a strange year, a lot of controversies, some of them more warranted than maybe others. Some I didn't think, I don't know. I just feel like a lot of times people take things out of context, which is one thing, and then they just put their own context onto it. So not only do they take the Mr. Editor thing out of context, they put it like he's like actually meant that literally, which I don't know. Maybe he did. And again, he was wrong there. You don't send a story, but but again, I don't know all the details. Like when my initial reaction was like, let me hear what the details were of that. Because you want to get things correct. So whatever, we don't have to get deep into that. Right. But the bottom line is, I don't think it will impact him at all. I think ESPN is going to want him back big time. I think the gambling sites, Caesars, all these other places, there's going to be interest in him. And Passan could have gone gambling sites, but chose to stay at ESPN and got a big raise.
It's just strange when the top NFL reporter in the game has to apologize twice within like a month for some shady actions.
Want your apology. That's a bad apology rate. Right. That apology rate that high.
Well said. A couple of positives though from the year we should highlight. It's probably forgotten by most people now, but Fox really had a huge, huge smash hit with the Field of Dreams game. If you talk to Fox, if you say, give us a little highlights of your year, I'm sure they're going to say the ratings for the noon game and the NFL ratings. And I think they'd put Field of Dreams probably at 3. Would you agree with that, John?
Yeah, I thought the Field of Dreams game is something that, brought a lot of attention to a regular season game, which you don't get all the time. It was a first time, full stadium. It ended up being a great game. I think that the White Sox won it in the bottom of the ninth against the Yanks, and the ratings were good. It was
huge.
A fantastic hospitality event for Fox's, sponsors and everything, which is another reason why they would really like it. I know people that listen to this don't care much, but that matters to.
John got frozen.
They're doing it again next year.
You froze up there for a second. I was going to follow up with, you know, what are you hearing about? You know, it's one of those things where I could see them now. They'll try to do it like 2, 3, 4 times next year, probably.
I think they're definitely going to do Iowa next year. And then they're trying to find other areas so they're not just stuck in the Midwest, so they can, you know, go out west. Or there are other baseball cathedrals that they can go and do something like that at.
Another Fox highlight for me was they brought Gus back to the NFL. Gus Johnson on the NFL is a great thing. Andrew, I know Fox, they're very happy about their big noon ratings.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't like, to me, that's not, I don't see that as like something you get like massive credit for. Like, you took a good game and put it.
No, you're wrong.
They created a whole window. Yeah,
I couldn't care less. That's my point. I couldn't care less, but I don't care about that. But it is a big deal that they made noon a thing. I mean, that wasn't a thing. 3:30 and primetime was the thing. They made it basically the top rated window, and they found that spot that was a weak spot on the schedule and turned it into something. I think that's impressive.
But what I'm trying to say is, let me see if I could articulate it. What you're saying is right. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but it's one of those things. It's like, well, why didn't anyone think of that sooner? Like, in past years, they would take whatever game they had, put it at 3:30 against ABC, ESPN. So now they move it to noon where there's no competition. I would hope it does well.
If I'm a TV executive and you give me a great game, I'm going to want to put it in prime time and try to get as many people as possible.
Yeah, but when they did that, no one watched. Nobody watches Fox College football.
Yeah, you're proving your point. So yeah, so they made it. They did a good job by moving it to noon.
What other choice did they have at this point? Stay status quo and get killed by ESPN every week at 3:30 and 8 o'clock, or make a change that seemed like a layup? Because of course, if you're going to put Oklahoma, Texas against Purdue, Minnesota, I would think you'd get the better rating.
Yeah, but the idea is at noon, most people are going about their day. Prime time, even on a Saturday, people are more likely to watch or late after. Again, this is, but you're like, this is hindsight bias, right? It works. So you're like, oh, of course. But you're right. Nobody thought of it this time.
Yeah,
so
because was there any chance it wouldn't have worked? Again,
yes.
There's a big chance.
You're telling me if you put Oklahoma, Texas at noon against Purdue, Minnesota, that you're not going to get a better rating?
Noon on a beautiful Saturday.
Now we know that.
I want to be outside potentially.
Listen, I think more people might watch games at noon than at 8 o'clock on a Saturday at 8 o'clock is really dead. But
you should be a TV executive. You knew this before.
Yeah. Well, here's what I knew. When Fox put their best games at 4 and 8, nobody watched them. So I would hope they would move it to where they have no competition. And that's what they did. I give them credit for doing it, but I didn't think that, how could it have failed? They're going against no competition.
Look at like Sunday NFL, 4:30, the late afternoon window is the biggest window. It's not it's not the early game. No matter what game you put in there. I don't think, but before they did that, nobody viewed the noon window as the potentially biggest audience of the day.
Right. But it goes back to the point, wherever you put the best game, people sort of find it and watch it and, you know, work their schedule around that. Boy, Andrew's pissed about that one. Holy shit.
He's living. I don't care. John loves giving, we do a thing, who's up, who's down, to start each podcast. John loves giving it to executives. He gave it to Michael Mulvihill, who's Fox's sports executive, who came up with this. Like, it was the greatest thing ever. So John's the one who should be upset.
Okay. All right.
I'm not really upset.
I'm just defending my guy. That's all.
Yeah.
Again, I give him credit for making that move, but again, you put Ohio State, Michigan at noon against Ole Miss and
we got it.
Vanderbilt.
That was the great move.
What's going to happen? Any stories from 2021 I missed that we should have discussed?
You know, the one story that I've been talking about forever is the regional sports networks, and I write about them just about every other week. And the cord cutting that's happening is not hitting ESPN nearly as much as these regional sports networks, which are in deep trouble. And if they go, if they start to go under and bring in less money, that's less money for all the teams. And
it's
a big potential problem.
John, do you know, in terms of cord cutting for 2021, was it in line with, do we have numbers yet in terms of how it's rank compared to past years? Because it is interesting to me where it is a cord cutting world. And yet, like you said, 425 on Sunday, there's 25 million people. The Thanksgiving Cowboys and who they play in Thanksgiving? Raiders. Highest rated game since, you know, we were born, basically. So, yes, there's cord cutting, but it does seem like traditional cable networks still holding their own compared to the way it's been the last few years.
It's yeah. still happening and it's still going. And then those audiences are going to get, they're going to get lower and lower. There's a research company called Moffitt Nathanson who put out, they expect there to be about 53 million cable satellite subscribers within the next 5 years. Right now it's right around like 80 million. So they should drop a little bit more, but there will be a bottom. We had Steve Bornstein on our podcast and he was like, we still listen to radio. Like there's still going to be, you know, for older people like me, I'm still going to be subscribing to the cable bundle and watching stuff that way.
Yep. Andrew, any stories?
Another big story is going to be ESPN going to direct to consumer. That'll probably happen, I think, within the next 5 years. And so then they'll still be available on cable, but then you'll also be able to buy it directly. I think that's going to happen. And so, yeah, things are changing. So I guess, I mean, this is going to be a constant theme in terms of this space, is just the constant changing of what we're used to and in sports media and the gambling influx. So as usual, Jimmy, I think you covered it pretty much all.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys coming on the Marshan and Oran podcast every week, wherever you get your podcasts, taking the internet by storm since their debut. Marshan, of course, in the New York Post. I think it was Al. Was it Al when Al came on? He said, and I was trying to ask him if he's going to Amazon. He said Marshan would know before him.
That was very nice of him to say that. Yeah. I don't know if that's true, but that's nice of him to say.
And John, of course, Sports Business Journal does a great job covering the business side of things. So I appreciate you guys coming on. Happy holidays. And we'll do it again at the end of 2021, hopefully. But you guys will obviously separately be on the SI Media podcast throughout 2022, I mean. So thank you very much to both of you and continued success with the Marshan and Oran. Not Oran and Marshan. Marshan and Oran.
Wait till he takes a week off, Jimmy. Wait till he takes a week off.
Cut that name right
out. Oran Sports Media Podcast. Yeah. You'll be talking about some derision. That'd be good. We should create some derision.
That's what you need. You need a feud. You gotta start a feud.
I don't know. All right. Well,
all right. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks for
I appreciate
having us, guys.
It. All right, take it easy.
Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, time for our weekly train of thought segment right here on the SI Media Podcast. So I bring in my buddy Sal Licata from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV. He's been with us every week since about mid-2021 as we wrap up here Christmas week. Sal, how are you?
Great. Did you hear back from Kevin James from you outlashing against him?
I've not heard back from Kevin James. I'm sure he's got way bigger fish to fry. Listen. When 9 billion people see the trailer and say your movie's garbage, I don't think he's going to worry about me.
It's a good point.
Not worry about Kevin James.
Clutter there of burying Kevin James. Yeah.
So we're here at Christmas week. We'll get into a couple of holiday things. I want to ask you this question. I don't want to get into a COVID discussion. It's the last thing I want to do. But I do like to quiz people about certain things because here in New York, COVID is running rampant. And it seems like it's, you know, completely out of control. And I just saw a tweet right before we started that Billy Joel is playing MSG tonight. We're taping this on Monday, December 20th. So his residency, I guess, is back in full force. If you could get tickets, would you go tonight to see Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden?
So are you asking me, you're saying basically if with the COVID factor has nothing to do with
what other factor would be? Why else would you say no? You're going to be a dick. I'll rephrase the question. If you had the opportunity to see Billy Joel tonight, would you go?
Yes. Okay. Without question. I've been taking the LIRR. You think, I mean, I'm risking myself taking the LIRR. I'm not going to go see Billy Joel.
Would you wear a mask?
Good question.
Right. Because on the Long Island Railroad, you have to wear a mask.
Yes. Although not everybody does that. I mean, I do, especially now. I probably would not wear a mask. I got vaccinated because I want to be free. I'm tired of this crap.
So you're a spreader. Okay, well, let me get that out of the way.
So what, you would go and wear a mask or you just avoid it?
I probably wouldn't go tonight only because we're 4 days away from Christmas and I don't want to be sick on Christmas Eve. If it was,
well, see, it that's was a great a week question. From,
well, that's my job.
But I didn't know you were asking because of Christmas. You're right. Like, you should be. And matter of fact, I asked my wife this morning because I've been taking the train and driving sometimes. Train is a lot easier with the new hours that I've had this month. And she's like, take the train. I was like, yeah, but I don't want, God forbid, I test positive or something or feel sick over the next couple of days. I don't want to ruin Christmas. So you should be, you're right. Thinking right, of so that
you're ready, but you're ready to go sing We Didn't Start the Fire without a mask. Oh, tonight,
if somebody so. Invited me. It's been a while. I haven't been to a Billy Joel concert since 2019. Right.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. I want to, a couple of, I got a couple of train of thoughts topics here. I want to read you a tweet, it is a tweet, but it's a quote from Bruce Arians. So the Bucks are welcoming, speaking of COVID, this is a good transition. Antonio Brown and his fake vaccine cards are being welcomed back into the Bucks fold. Now, I want to read you this quote from Bruce Arians, but this has nothing to do. Take the Antonio Brown factor out of this. I take the fake vaccine cards and what Antonio Brown did out of this. This is from Rick Stroud, who covers the Bucks. Bucks Bruce Arians on what people may think about his decision to welcome back Antonio Brown following a 3-game suspension when he said one more strike and he's gone. Quote, I could give a shit what they think. Only thing I care about is this football team and what's best for us. I can tell you how much I love that quote and how much it makes me love Bruce Arians. Listen, I understand if you don't think Antonio Brown deserves to come back and the fake vaccine card, and some people probably think he should be in jail. I get all that. I don't think you should be using fake vaccine cards. Take that out of it. Whenever a coach makes a decision, no matter what the decision is, I wish they would all say this. Everybody now is so worried about everyone else's opinion, blowback's going to be. And now you have an NFL coach. You may not like why he's saying it, but he's like, I don't give a shit. I'm doing what I want. We need more of this from people in sports and in the world. And I like Bruce Arians more because of that quote.
I don't love Arians as a coach or whatever, but yeah, you respect the honesty. I think that's what we're getting at. We all know he can give you the old bull crap answer of, well, you know, he paid his penalty and, you know, we thought about it. He's basically telling you, I don't care what anybody else thinks. He's going to help my football team win. And that's what this is about, winning. So ultimately, yes, you respect
the honesty. And I like that he's not, because everyone wants him to cut Antonio Brown. He's not just going to do it because that's what everyone else wants. That's what I appreciate. And he said, I don't give a shit, basically. I would love to see more coaches take that approach and more people take that approach.
Well, but we're living in an era now where everybody caves to public pressure. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of times it feels like that.
That's why I enjoyed that quote.
Yeah, that's fair.
Next train of thought topic. I doubt you did. Were you at all into, did you pay attention, follow any of the Tiger Woods playing golf with his son over the weekend?
I didn't watch it, but I did read about it afterward and saw some of the pictures. I think it's great. Now, I used to be a Tiger fan. And then when he went through the whole, you know, we find out the truth about Tiger, then I hated him. I read that book. Was it Armand Cattain who wrote that book? Yeah. I read that, or I listened to it a few years ago, which turned me off to Tiger. But I thought that was a touching moment. And to see him back, I mean, the guy almost died. They talked about amputating his leg potentially. To see him on the golf course, period. But then with the son, I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay, so explain this to me. Because I don't pay attention to golf. And I don't really follow it at all. But obviously, when, you know, Tiger comes back, everyone just, you know, spends the whole weekend orgasming that Tiger's back.
Right, right.
And all we get, you know, I tried to stay off Twitter a lot over the weekend because I usually do. And then with the COVID stuff, I just didn't want to pay attention to it. But anytime I checked Twitter, it was about Tiger this, Tiger, 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 his son, Tiger, his son, his Tiger. And then I saw today, they lost out to John Daly. Like the John Daly, who's a goofball, who's out of shape and smokes on the course. And that's who Tiger lost to. And everyone's trying to, and Tiger's, but I'm very confused how this happened, right?
I don't know how it works, but yes, I read the same thing when I saw John Daly. I was like, oh, damn, I like John Daly, but I didn't see one picture of him. I couldn't tell you who he was playing with, his nephew, his brother, whatever. All I know is that that particular tournament is former major winners that play with a family member. So how they add it up, I'm thinking to myself, how, you know, are they taking Tiger's ball all the time? Are they going to use his son's ball? So I don't know how the logistics of it go. I just thought it was cool to see Tiger back out there, in particular back out there with his son, where you talk about what he went through. But yes, that John Daly.
I just found it fascinating that I heard about a Tiger swing and Tiger is going to win in a major and Tiger's bad. And then he lost to John Daly, who I don't even think is like a real guy. I take him as like a.
Right. But this is, you know, this is not head to head tournament necessarily with the family members being involved. Also, and again, I'm not a huge Tiger fan anymore. Remember, he's lucky he's alive. He's lucky he's walking. I mean, so to be out on the golf course, and not only that, lucky he's alive, lucky he's walking, then to finish second and actually contend, I think that's why people are saying, you know, we never thought we'd see him on the golf course again, and right. There he is contending even in this particular tournament.
Right, it's never, we never thought we'd see him on the golf course. Then I'm reading about how he's going to win another major. So, I know, that's the media covering Tiger for you. Does the dog have to go for a walk, or is the dog hungry?
I don't know
hungry?
What he's doing. Probably some UPS package or Amazon or something.
Another train of thoughts topic here. I made a wager this afternoon. I put a little money on the Packers to win the Super Bowl, which is stupid because they have the best odds right now, and it might go down if they lose a game, which I don't think they will, or if Rodgers gets hurt or something like that. But they're plus 450 right now.
Okay, that's not bad. And 4.5 to 1.
And if whoever they play in the Super Bowl, they're going to be big favorites over most likely. Well, not the Chiefs. So you're getting great value at plus 450. If you were betting a future on Super Bowl winner, who would
great
you bet
question.
Right now?
I'd probably, I mean, realistically, I'd probably bet the Pats because I like the price and I like the storyline and I want to root for them. But do I really envision them winning the Super Bowl? Probably not. I would not go AFC. If I'm not going Pats, I'm not going AFC. I mean, unless you think the Bills could somehow make a run, nobody else in the AFC to me is a legitimate threat. So I like your bet. The Bucs suck. I'm so tired of the Buccaneers. Now they lose Godwin for the year. I don't care if they get Brown back. You can't score a freaking point against the Saints. Oh, my God. So
I cannot wait till we're done taping this so I can call you and ask you the amount lost.
It wasn't that bad. It's just that I've been in a rut, and I thought that was a layup, and that was the last leg of a tease. I was like, oh, all they got to do is win. And then I'm watching the score at half. I'm like, 6-0. Come on, can you put some points on the board here? 9-0 final. I don't like Arizona. I mean, maybe the Rams. Yeah, I like your bet. I mean, looking at it right now, the Packers should be the favorite.
The top four were, so Green Bay is plus 450. The Chiefs are plus 475. The Bucks are plus 600. Patriots plus 900. Then you had a bunch of teams. The Bills, who you mentioned, were in there plus 1,100. My thing was after what happened on Sunday, and the injuries with the Bucs, you mentioned Godwin, which I think is an enormous, enormous injury. To me, unless you give me the Chiefs, I don't see anyone winning the Super Bowl right now except for the Packers.
Well, the AFC, I mean, think about it. Give me the teams. Like I said, I don't think the Chiefs are going back, nor do I think they're winning it. I would be surprised if they went back to another one, win or lose. So to me, it comes down to the Bills or Pats, and ultimately, I'd probably favor the NFC this year. I'm rolling out the Bucs. I'm rolling out the Cardinals. That leaves me with three teams, Cowboys, Packers, and Rams. Cowboys, I like them. They're not Super Bowl. What's the Rams value? If it's higher than 10-1, I may be interested in throwing down some money for a decent value with the Rams.
It's a good question. I had it right here. The Rams are plus 520. Oh, no, excuse me. That's NFC Championship. My bad. There's Super Bowl here.
It'd make me sick if Odell Beckham Jr. won a Super Bowl. But still, I like McVay. Their defense, they could run the football, assuming they could get back healthy.
Well, the Rams are plus 525 to win the NFC. So it would be a little less for the Super Bowl. I don't know why now they don't have the Super Bowl on here.
Whatever. Those would be the teams that I'd be looking at. But yes, I don't like that you made that bet now. Why not just wait till the, I don't know. You think it's going to change that much in your favor or against you, I should say?
Well, a couple of reasons. I don't want to keep changing my mind. And I think the Packers have been the best team all year, probably.
Mm-hmm. And that's fair.
I could see, I have a feeling Rodgers is extremely motivated by becoming, I mean, he got the shit kicked out of him before the season started because people thought he wanted out of Green Bay. He might retire. He was unhappy with the front office. Then the whole COVID thing. If it's not this year for Rodgers, like, when is it?
How agreed? How great would it be if Rodgers wins the Super Bowl, holds up the Lombardi Trophy, and says, "And Baba Booey to you all."
He'll say something. I mean, listen, Aaron Rodgers, if he wins the Super Bowl, will have a lot a lot. Oh, to
of
say
course, about the stick media it to Stern and everybody else who's been ripping them for the last year or so, whatever.
Right. Last thing here, we got to discuss. Now, I need to know. I need anyone who's still listening at this point to hit us up on Twitter. Hit me up on Twitter. Sal and I, one of the things we've bonded over the years is we both love this radio DJ. Oh. She's on 106.7 Light FM here in New York, but she's syndicated nationally. So anyone in the country can hear her. And I need to know if other people at Christmas time listen to Delilah. Sal and I have been talking about this. Every year at Christmas, Sal and I start texting each other. Now, the only other person I know who's a huge Delilah fan is my friend Chris Chavez, my friend and colleague who works here at SI and, you know, does this whole big running thing. Chavez is the person, if you remember, who got me to post on Instagram that I was running a marathon, which caused the whole hullabaloo. So Chavez is a huge Delilah fan, you and me.
Now, how old is he? Isn't he much younger than us?
Yeah, he is.
Right, which is nice. Delilah's transcendent. Yeah.
So I need to know, if anyone listening is a Delilah fan, hit us up, let us know. Shout out to the Delilah fans out there. Sal, tell people why you love Delilah.
Two reasons. Number one, I enjoy Christmas music and the holiday, but more specifically, her delivery. Now, even if you've listened to me just on this podcast, but if you ever heard me do a radio show or on TV, I'm kind of high-strung, high-energy. I have road rage. Jimmy, you know that firsthand. I don't want to deal with traffic. Delilah has the ability to relax me. It's very therapeutic listening to the sounds of Delilah in the holiday year. It's become part of tradition. I missed it when I was living in the city and I wasn't driving because, you know, if I'm not driving back then, I don't even know if they had an app to listen. I wasn't listening, but now been, you know, driving regularly for the last several years. I love Delilah around this time. She's great. She's relaxing. It's part of the holiday cheer.
I bet over 23 points for Old Dominion in this bowl game. They have 10. The guy goes into the end zone and fumbles the ball in the end zone. And now even Delilah won't be able to make me happy.
I can't even believe you get into these bowl games. What
else are you going to do at 2:30 on a Monday afternoon? I don't even know. Oh, the Myrtle Beach Bowl. This schmuck fumbled the ball for the end zone. Here's the thing about Delilah. She has the perfect radio voice. Right. Perfect. Soothing, calm. And the way the show is, people call up with all these holiday problems and problems. Yeah. And she tells them, you know, listen, you got to take care of yourself. And it's all about getting through the holidays with family and putting you first and make sure you.
But it's fascinating. With those.
And then all of a sudden you hear like, you know, and then it goes right into like Mariah Carey or.
It's great.
So I need to know about the podcast listeners, if they're Delilah.
She must have a big listenership. No, I mean, I don't
know.
It's
huge because it's syndicated. Yeah. She's on at night. I think she's on from like 8 to 12 or 8 to 11 or 7 to 11. Like, I don't know the exact hours. I just know like when it's Christmas time, like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, when I want Alexa, play 106.7. Delilah comes on. And Alexa off. Now she's going on. And, It's so relaxing. And now listen, it can get a little depressing, some of the stories. But then Delilah, like, she picks you up and then the Christmas song plays. It's like story, Delilah's words of wisdom, Christmas song.
If you haven't listened, and I'm curious to see what the reaction is. If you haven't, you have to just to at least check it out and see what it's about. Because it's more than just the Christmas music. It is, you know, it's a fascinating listen, really. Like you said, everybody can relate because everybody's got some kind of an issue, whatever it may be, breaking up with a girlfriend, divorce, or, you know, somebody in the family getting whatever. And that's exactly. We need the Delilah type for sports betting. The losses.
Yeah, seriously. That's a good idea.
That last night.
Give you a calming influence. Yeah. You needed it last night.
It's going to be okay, Jimmy. So
the texts are coming in fast and furious. All right. We only have like, you know, 3-4 nights of Delilah left. So got to get it in. And we got football coming up over these nights here with the reworked schedule.
Disaster. For me, it's a disaster. For you, I know you're in heaven. For me, it's forget it. This game might as well not even be played today.
I can't wait to wrap this up and get in the chair. Be there till midnight. All right, Sal, I appreciate it. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you next week. Take it
Merry easy. Christmas. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right, my thanks to Andrew Marchand, John Oran, Sal Licata, and you guys for listening. I appreciate it. If you're out there celebrating Christmas, have a very merry, happy Christmas. Stay safe. Spend some time with the SI Media podcast over the little break here you might have this weekend. If you missed any recent episodes, Trey Aikman was on the podcast last week, Stanford Steve 2 weeks ago, Jim Miller 3 weeks ago. Give me a Christmas present. Subscribe to the SI Media podcast. Leave a review on Apple. It is appreciated. We will have another episode fresh live next week as well, going into the new year. So we won't be leaving you. So have a happy and Merry Christmas. Stay safe. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media podcast. Take care.